So let's get started. And the first thing I see is roll call for the P&Z Commission.
Would you mind?
You want me to do the roll call?
Yeah,
okay. Commissioner Steele.
Here.
Cable.
Here.
McBride's not. Merkin.
Here.
Smith.
Here.
Minns.
Here.
Sherwood is not. Board of Supervisors, Sanders, I am here. Chitty.
Here.
Olson.
I think I'm here.
All right. First thing we get to do is we get to recognize outstanding service by two of your P&Z Commission members who are rolling off. Aaron, how long have you been chair?
3 years, 4 years?
Yeah.
So
five.
No, he's
been on.
Sure.
And
four.
Yeah.
And really, so it, in my experience with Aaron, has been a solid voice that really tried hard to keep the commission on track, and we just really, really appreciated the service you put in. I know you got more goats than you can say grace over now, and so we understand that it's time for you to move on to greener pastures or more overgrown fields, but we thank you so much for what you've put in.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. And then Linda Merkin, who is leaving this commission but moving on to different things. Linda, I so appreciate what you did on planning and zoning, and I'm excited about working with you on the Board of Supervisors, and this is going to be a whole lot of fun. But thank you very much for your service here on the P&Z Commission.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it quite a bit, learned a lot. Made good friends. We've had some interesting discussions, and I kind of tried to summarize it in my resignation letter, and I'll hand it all to you later, and you can either throw it out in the waste basket on the way out, or you can read it.
And I hope all those same things will be true, that you'll be able to say the same thing about your time on with the Board of Supervisors.
Oh, I'm sure.
But let me hand these out and say thank you very much. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Can we get some photos?
Thank you.
Can you take a picture?
Yeah. How about with the whole commission?
Sure.
You don't need me in the
morning.
Now, later.
Yeah, let's do it now.
Okay. However you want. Amelia, you're in charge.
Okay.
You tell us how you want it.
Line up. Maybe, well, that's not a great spot right now, is it? How about, can you all fit behind the table?
Sure. Absolutely.
Is that okay?
All right, everybody's in.
Everybody.
Oh,
I thought it was
them. Yeah.
I was in
here.
Yeah.
You
okay. Amelia, change your mind. We're going up front. Right up here with the steel in the background.
Yeah. I'll try to get this out.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be in the office tomorrow.
Really?
Marty and Boris, two steps that way. Gary, you're right over in the middle. Slide right over in between the two of them.
There we go.
There we go.
Oh, awesome.
All right, now we're good. Okay.
Right.
We never need it.
Jeez. Okay, I'm taking a view. Okay.
All right, thanks everybody.
Thank you.
Yes, I got to go west for Sam.
All those hours.
Okay. The
judiciaries
are
going
to be nice. They are.
Ready? We're going to talk work program, the 2019 work program. Jerry, I'm just going to throw it to you and take us through it.
Thank you. I just want to start by saying thank you to my staff. Planning staff, Amelia and Emily, have great skill in the planning work that we do. Very dedicated. They don't need to hear from me to work extra hours. They know what they need to do to get the job done, and their effort and their abilities are greatly appreciated. Stephanie works for two departments. She has a lot to keep track of. I greatly appreciate the work that you do, Stephanie. Deb is gone, but she's a go-to person for me and our department, a great resource, and has been very beneficial to our department. I think we have the best planning and zoning commission in the state, and I sincerely mean that.
Wow.
The two members that are leaving, you're going to be missed greatly. We just brought six ordinances to these guys, and they were extremely helpful. We had really good dialogue, meaningful input, and it really, I think, helped us create ordinances that have standing. That went to the board. There was, I think, some discussion, but I think we really delivered solid products. So very happy about that. I think we have an awesome board of supervisors. I appreciate your role. I know that you have the interest of the citizens at heart at everything that you review, and I'm very proud to say that I work here. I know the staff feels the same way. So I think we've got everybody covered. So before I get into the work program, I just want to give you a snapshot of the things that we've worked on. Okay, we looked at four rezonings this year, 19 subdivisions. Most of those are residential parcel subdivisions. It's a simple division. If there's an existing dwelling, it allows for another division. 25 conditional use permits. Probably a quarter of those were insignificant modifications, which are administratively reviewed. Most of those were reviewing antenna equipment, radio transmitter changes. So it's good to know that our existing infrastructure is being updated and improved. Six variance cases, which is probably a lot for Story County. I think when I got here, we might have had one, maybe a few the next year, but we had six so far. One road renaming. 39 plat of survey, which is, again, is a division once into two. Property research, both Emily and Amelia do those, 44 of those. We had meetings with the AIM staff. There were seven cases that involved proposed projects within the AIMs River Fringe. We looked at 21 agricultural exemptions. We, even if it's an agricultural use, we would like to have farmers come in and apply for a zoning permit. If it's for ag use, we have an agricultural exemption application that we like to keep on file, because over time, some of the times these properties, the dwelling, the outbuildings get split out, and the use of the house and the dwelling changes. So we want to be able to keep track of those things. We had 38 code enforcement issues. We issued 12 notice of violations. A good share of those were construction that occurred prior to us doing the inspection. We have three issues involving court action. One is the McKay property southwest of Ames. The Board of Supervisors took action to challenge or appeal the court's decision. Hickory Grove, that was supposed to be heard by a judge on November 9th, but the attorney for the county and the opposing side's attorney got together with the judge, and they decided to submit what they referred to as legal briefs that the judge is reviewing. And I do not believe that the decision has been rendered on that yet. Crestview, the 29th, which was Thursday, was the deadline for compliance on the Hoop building. It was approved with the condition that all the units be removed. I met with Brandt in the afternoon on Thursday. For the most part, it was in pretty good shape. The habitable mobile homes were removed. There was one unit that he converted to storage. There was two that he's in the northeast part of the site that he refers to as a fence to barricade the mobile home park from his personal use. I told him it's not a fence. We require permits for fence. We don't have permits for those two mobile homes. A lot of debris. So these people had things under their units. They had attached decks, and so there was things under there. So he's starting through all that. There's a lot of blocks, a lot of metal material. And so all that stuff needs to be removed. And there's a huge pile of dirt that was brought in. And then lastly, there's semi-trucks, campers, trailers, and vehicles that also need to be addressed. But the camera batteries went out halfway through, so I got back and looked at the photos because I started to use my camera and they were really dark. So I went back out on Friday, and lo and behold, there were two mobile homes that were brought in either Thursday night or Friday morning. So technically he's not in compliance with what he was supposed to do. On Thursday, I asked him to give me an indication of what he wanted to do with the property. He's telling me that he wants to sell it, but he's also, he has a lot of questions about continued use. And I assured him, we don't care who owns it. We just want to know what's proposed and that it meets the county's requirements. So I asked him to give a indication in writing as to what the use would be, schedule for compliance, and then I told him I'd follow up. Well, that I gave him until Tuesday, and it's Wednesday, and I have not heard from him. So
he's in my voicemail. He had scheduled a meeting with me yesterday, and it didn't happen. Okay. He's in my voicemail again today wanting to reschedule. What he's saying is that he's got a developer. I don't know what this means. I don't know anything other than he's in my voicemail wanting to meet, saying that somebody is interested in the property and wanting me to walk him through the process. All I'm going to do is send him to you guys. But if he wants to meet, I'll meet with him. It's just that's hit and miss.
I've had a discussion with Ethan about it, and we think we're going to go an NLV route. He gets 30 days to comply or come up with a compliance schedule. So that's really what I was after from the beginning. The site looks much, much better.
Yeah, you can at least see the light at the end of the tunnel and not think it's an oncoming train.
Yeah.
But we've got to go ahead and get to the end, and I would encourage you guys and staff, just follow the process. Whatever, just follow the process, especially when we're dealing with somebody like Brandt, follow it to the letter.
Right.
And I
thought I'd hear from him, so I was surprised.
Tinker Grove, I haven't heard anything on other than they filed those briefs, and now it's sitting there. The McKay property, we actually think we're in really good standing. We actually hope that the judge's ruling was an effort to get us to challenge it. There's a conflict in law of what's happened there, and that's why the ruling came down the way it did. This conflict actually hurts a lot of smaller counties and smaller communities. I think there was some excitement at the idea that somebody, an entity with the wherewithal that Story County has, could push this a little bit, hopefully get it to the Supreme Court, because ultimately that's where it's either going to be resolved in the Supreme Court or in the state legislature. We can push that a little bit, and our attorneys, I think, feel good of where this thing is headed.
Could you back up the Hickory Grove? I assume this is the Hickory Grove Mobile Home Park that's mm-hmm. right up by McFarland, right? Okay, so I was not aware that they had sued us.
Yeah, I mean, this issue went to the Board of Adjustment. It's a legal non-conforming. It was constructed prior to zoning. And our point is that they've expanded, and with non-conforming uses, you're not allowed to expand. They're only allowed 34 mobile homes. They've brought in at least three or four more. They want to have 40. They've changed out existing for new, which were larger units. And then there were some issues with some of the accessory buildings not meeting setbacks. So the whole issue went to the Board of Adjustment. They actually requested variances.
That part of it.
And they were denied all three variances. So we ended up sending a violation, and then this is the consequence. It was challenged.
Okay.
And so we were supposed to have this court date, and then they decided to do these legal briefs, which I guess is another option to address it. And so the judge...
Right, but the decision point is whether they're grandfathered in under us not having zoning at the time they came. That's what I'm understanding. Is that right or wrong, from what you understand?
They're arguing that the use as a whole is grandfathered in, so the number of units doesn't matter. They can have
right.
as many as they want because it's a use. It's not a count issue.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's no, like, parts that have the residential mobile home district designation have lots. There's no lots with...
Right.
There were no lots with Crestview. There's no lots with Hickory Grove. So if they can have 40, can they have 50?
Well, that's the best point. Is there a lot?
What's that number?
They have a footprint to put them on. They've done it. And they have room to put more on there.
So we've
been squeezed in.
Well, the Board of Adjustment dealt with this how many months ago?
At least two or three.
Yeah. And then they filed. Yeah. soon after that. Just this against board adjustment.
I understand that. Yeah. I just was trying to figure out how we would be notified of that. But okay, go forward now that I've brought up the name.
Yeah. Do they have adequate wastewater treatment?
According to whom? Yeah, yeah. Well, they meet regulations.
According to DNR.
Yes.
They aren't calling in by the gallon, is what you're asking.
Well, that's part of it, too, because they've been working with an engineer on plans to upgrade their system, so the upgrade would include them being able to have 40 units, but we don't. All the historical records indicate that the maximum limit was the 34. That's the number that we.
The owner is out of town. It's not a local owner. It's a
California person.
Yeah. So are they grandfathered in?
Well, that's what the court's got to decide. We say they aren't.
The issue is
we're not arguing the use.
Expansion.
Right. We're not arguing the use. We're arguing the number. Right. So we're saying that they're capped at 34. They very clearly went to like 36, and then they softly went to like 38, and now they're trying to go to 40, and we're drawing the line and saying, no, it was 34. It's always been 34. You never asked for it to change off of 34. And that's where Board of Adjustment came back down, and now they're challenging that point in court.
So
is
there
17A?
17. Administrative Procedures Act.
I'm not sure what you're asking, I'm sorry.
So they're appealing an administrative agency decision to the district court.
I don't know that that's...
Is the Board of Adjustment an administrative agency, though?
Yes, it is. It's a quasi-judicial agency. So they're appealing under Chapter 17A.
I don't think they appealed the Board of Adjustment decision.
They have 30 days to file that, but they didn't do that.
So they appealed, like, I think, the violation notice.
Because part of this is we were asking them for a schedule after the Board of Adjustment action, and they refused to do it. So we ended up sending the NOV and the citation.
Okay, well, they're still appealing an administrative agency's act because they're appealing what you did.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Now so I understand where it's...
As they replace older units with newer units, where are we there?
Part of the variance was if they're bigger.
And they clearly probably they are.
And they are.
Yeah, and they've admitted that they're larger. We don't think that that's something that's presented.
For down the road, it's just interesting from an affordable housing standpoint. But anyway, that's my whole comment there, not to get us off track.
Well, and with non-conforming, our chapter indicates that they're not supposed to last forever. They're supposed to be an ending point. So it can stay as long as it wants to, but you can't expand or, you know, increase the activity in it. So
the end point is when the trailers fall apart.
What's that?
The end point is not a date and time. It's when the trailers are no longer used.
And people don't find them reasonable or for, you know, habitation.
Oh, so it has to be the original trailers?
Mm-hmm. Well,
or
I think that's a strict question. If you keep replacing units, then there's no...
Are we worried about holding the unit price, or are we trying to keep the original to degrade out of existence?
So we'll be interested to see what the court has to say about numbers. And before we move into work program, which is the item on our agenda, I just want to say about staff. So I get to do a lot of work with the Iowa Association of Counties. And in many ways, Story County is looked to for what we provide. But it is recognized the kind of planning and zoning staff that we have, headed by Jerry, of course. But we've got two young rock stars down there at the end of the table that we're going to absolutely hang on to as long as we possibly can. We're really, really lucky with what we have. And the job that Stephanie does managing two. So I was part of the board when we decided to combine her position. This is before Stephanie came, but the position to handle both Board of Health and Planning. I'm sure that Stephanie cusses us every day for that decision, but she does a great job.
She has a hand.
So thank you to you guys. Now, let's talk work program.
Work program. We broke this down really into two areas. Things that were part of the Cornerstone to Capstone Comprehensive Plan. There's 15 of those items, and O is other things. We think we're in a pretty good position. We had, I think, a total of 27 items that we were to look at for 2018. We think we completed seven of those things, and we have plate spinning on another 10. And if you look at the first 7, those were other things that took up our time. The next 10 are things that we had discussions about. We discussed things quite a bit in our office. But I don't think that these are going to be that too time-consuming, the last two tiers, tier 2 and tier 3. But quarterly, we're updating the Board of Supervisors about some of these activities. But the first 7, the Ames River Fringe Plan review that we did, we looked at a lot of different layers, the utilities, the land use, looked at transit information, the city's comprehensive plans, Ames and Gilbert, utilities. What am I missing? There was tons of things that we looked at. And we recommended land use changes and policy changes. And our hope is that the city of Ames is going through their comprehensive plan update process or getting ready to embark on it. And the goal is for them to seriously consider some of the recommendations that P&Z looked at and supported by the board. So, again, we looked at land use changes and policy recommendations. For Nald, that was, we were to assess
that. Can we talk about these as we go?
Yeah.
So in land use changes, so we had some policy recommendations. Did we have any land use changes that we thought were important?
I think there was an agreement on, there's like expansion of commercial nodes. From a policy standpoint, we allow in other areas of the county where we have existing dwellings to do another division, so residential parcel subdivisions. Gilbert just updated their comprehensive plan, and they identify in their plan the Ames River Fringe, and so their status is they want to stay status quo. They don't want to see a lot of growth and change, but I think Ames is open to at least looking at land use changes with the improvements that were made to this high school, with the paving that was done to Grant, and we get quite a few requests and interest to do different things there. So I guess we've recommended or suggested to allow for some flexibility. And one of the cases that we have is not on the fringe, but it's just outside of the fringe, is a rezoning request to a residential.
Yeah, because it feels to me like right now we're dealing with land use issues one at a time. We wait till there's an application, we see what it is, we deal with it at that point. And so I've suggested now for a couple years, both here in Story County and to the city of Ames. I haven't done it so much with Gilbert yet, but I've suggested that we ought to be looking at some kind of consistent pattern for looking at a quadrant of the Ames-Gilbert Urban Fringe Plan, and just making sure that, this thing was put together basically in the early 2000s. Wasn't adopted until 2009 or 10, I think.
Well, 6, and then 2018 was 11.
Okay, so 6 to 11, but it was really developed before that. We've had a lot of changes over the last 12 years. When this thing was put together in the early 2000s, Ames was still thinking that they were going to grow more southwest than north. We're seeing more growth north, but now we might be starting to see some growth south. I just continue to think that it makes sense for all of us to have the conversation about a reliable system. And this is once Ames finishes with their entire plan, a system where every year we go in and we look at part of it and just see, okay, are the maps lining up? Are the expected... North Dakota is a great example. What we originally did out there on North Dakota is not even remotely close to reality anymore. We saw it with what Winkleblatt proposed. We continue to see it as we go, and I'm just wondering if we ought to be more proactive than that. And what's our role?
My concern is that I actually heard someone with some input authority from Ames talk about it may not survive, the urban fringe plan. So on my little housing thing that wanders in and out, like Crusade, I have met with
three of the six city council people. And in all three of those meetings, I did bring up at the end about, as they're working on their comprehensive plan and the urban fringe plan, don't forget us, and we need to have these talks because I believe it's important that the urban fringe plan stay.
But let's just be clear. So Laura's 100% right that conversation is moving through the ranks in Ames. But it has very little to do with Story County. It has a lot to do with Gilbert. There are hard feelings between Ames and Gilbert over Gilbert viewing, Ames views that Gilbert put the kibosh on an annexation that they were doing.
About why they'd like to not happen anymore. That's what you're talking about. That part.
Correct.
Of the conversation.
And so there very clearly is a soft move by some in Ames to scrap the urban fringe plan. And I've had the same conversations or similar conversations to what sounds like you're having. And my stance is we work too hard to bring this in, even if it's not a trilateral agreement, even if it's just a bilateral agreement. Okay. Something needs to survive out of this, and we can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. So I would appreciate if we continue that. But I think part of continuing that is having a reliable system to take a look at what's going on with the plan rather than just waiting for there to be an issue before we try to dig in and deal with it.
Moving the conversation to the east side of the county, for taking John Hall on as their economic development director on the 1st of April, one of the things that the NEDC is asking him to do is to, in conjunction with the city council here, is to do an implementation of a urban fringe plan in regards to, you know, seeing the proposed growth as Nevada envisions it in its adjoining properties. So that will be something you will see going forward, because that's on John Hall's list of things to begin to do.
Do they see Ames and Story County involved in that potentially?
I would think that would be a question I would leave with John Hall, as he is probably driving the bus on this, and he is a tremendous resource. And we, you know, Nevada's had the opportunity to observe the successes and the setbacks that Gilbert and Ames have had in this process. And I think that they realize the fact that now you have an adjoining two communities in Ames and Nevada touching through the annexation process, that they had need to get moving in the direction in regards to land options and proposed annexation, proposed growth quarters. And they see that. So that is something you'll see probably starting in earnest in 2019.
One of the things that we looked at, too, with that review that we did is we looked at all the existing developments and made recommendations to expand some of the areas where we thought they could be expanded, or areas that were adjacent to existing subdivisions. So, you know, I think we did some pretty decent work there. I keep saying hope, but that
we don't want to see it all go away.
Oh, yeah. Without that answer and fringe plan, it'll be chaos.
It's what it was when we created and finally actually implemented the plan. We don't want to go back.
Because the developer, property owner, where do they start? Who has the authority to weigh in and whatnot? I mean, at least now we have order, we have a clear direction as to what happens if it's an annexation or a subdivision or whatever it is. Maybe we can work on, you know, revisions, but to not have it, I think it's...
So I'm not hearing a whole lot of pushback about the process that we use. What I'm hearing the pushback on is, well, that property, yeah, we designated it that, but that's not really what it is anymore. This really ought to come into the process a different place. And why the heck is Gilbert getting to weigh in on something that in Ames' view is not part of it? Right, is what I'm hearing. And again, what I'm saying to everybody who will listen is, hey, I'm not suggesting for a second that we don't need to dig in and refine this a little bit, but let's don't start over. Let's take what we got and try to build on it. And so I would appreciate if we collectively could ask that our staff continue to relay that message and continue to talk about, once Ames finishes with their full-on plan, that it's time for us to start looking at this on a regular basis.
Isn't it in Ames' best interest to kind of keep that, though? Because if not, then the land outside of Ames would come through the county, right?
It would be in
the county jurisdiction. They kind of lose their voice.
Well, but what they did before, when we had the old process, they would stay out of it. It would come through the county process, and then Ames would use the two-mile hammer to try to control things. And so it was a nightmare for us trying to get things done, for developers or landowners to try to get things done, but always with Ames sitting out here in the background. And what we did in this process is we just laid it all out on the table. This is the way the process is going to work. This is when each entity is going to weigh in. And so I don't know if Ames use it as it would be to their detriment. I think it makes things more complex, and they're the ones that are going to get a lot of the complaints. But the people, and I don't know who you're talking to that you're hearing this, the people that I'm hearing it, just they feel like Gilbert overstepped their bounds,
exactly.
And it embarrassed Ames, and they resent that. And so I'm just trying to be in their ear saying, okay, I get that, and if we need to make changes, let's talk about the changes. But the change can't be, here's the letter. What is it? I mean, we can all back out of this with any kind of notice, right?
There's a process that we have to notify the other two. But it's in everybody's best interest that we stay in it. Just keep.
I just want them to recognize that. And I want them to recognize that there's a mechanism. If they've got issues with parts of it, the way to correct that is not to get out of it. It's for us to talk about where they've got issues.
And then the existing agreement.
Okay. Other questions? I didn't mean to bog us down on urban fringe. Hey, we got through one item. Okay, let's go to
the next
one. I'll try to do better.
It's okay. We have a light agenda.
For all, we were to assess their needs. We spent quite a bit of time there. They had concerns about road issue, road repairs, traffic signs that were missing, 911 signs missing. There were some complaints that we dealt with, construction without permits, stormwater issues, which we tried to resolve but didn't get too far with. We were trying to have them support providing information for us to do a survey so that we could apply for some grant monies, but they did not want to do that. But there were some issues with some housing that was dilapidated. I talked to Margaret, and she's still shepherding that process. She said the communication is open. Nothing's closed. There's like three properties. I think each dwelling has been burnt, but there's still the rubble that needs to be dealt with. But we feel like we're at a spot where we'd like to close it. It's not uncommon that I don't get a complaint at least once a month from somebody out there, so we will be out there. I don't know if anybody has any questions about that.
You have one less property because of a controlled burn as of last month, so progress is, I measure it.
Right.
And the fact is that the partial burn that was right next to that property also got, with the property owner, asked to have that taken to the foundation, so it is a community of,
my concern is that for a small number of residents, it sounds like it eats up time of the staff.
It took a lot of time to do what we did.
These are unhappy souls, and you have long-term stakeholders that have been in the community generations. You have new people, and they don't always show up with the best interest of where they are. We have people we think that were quite likely in violation of septic, housing,
a number of things.
Yeah. And it's
but have we not cited them?
Here, let me use this as an example. We waive property rights on a property now that we have more people living in the garage that overcapacitates their septic system, that we can't get any kind of answer from the property owner who we waive the property taxes on to get a head count on who's living in her garage, because can't get her to answer the phone, and nobody there seems to know anything. The last time paperwork was served, the deputies did it. One property.
Thank you.
And so multiple issues in front of all, but so this one always makes me smile, because this was Paul Tooth's
baby.
This was Paul Tooth's baby, and here's the reality as I see it for the county. It would be great if we could say, well, you know, they're just part of the county. Let's treat them just like everybody else in the county. But they are a little different than that because they were once incorporated. They're not anymore. And the reality is if you draw the timeline out long enough in Story County, we're going to see other towns that for whatever reason down the road are probably going to unincorporate, right? I think you were one of them last night. Carlsberg is one that's teetering. Kelly is forever going to teeter. And the hope is that probably Huxley is going to come grab them before it really breaks loose. I mean, they're already making some moves there. But if we don't have a reliable process in place for how we're going to proactively deal with this, yes, they're just residents of the county. Yes, we should treat them just like a farmhouse out of the county. But they're not. I mean, it's different than that. They in essence, had city streets, and now they don't anymore. They, in essence, had...
They're villages in our compound.
Exactly. And so I don't want us to get bogged down spending a whole lot of time, but the problem is if we don't pay some attention to them, we're going to see some issues that are going to blow up way beyond our control before we get involved. And so I just want us to be really careful how we go forward in this.
Whatever process we develop around Fernald is going to be used later.
Correct. But if we walk away from it now, that's what we're going to be left with.
That's your beta test.
So my question then, we want to close this.
Well,
that's where I was headed.
Closing and assessing their needs, but
okay.
I get calls all the time from property owners to complaints. So we have a presence there. And the thing that we really wanted to help them with was the flooding. They have flooding and drainage issues, but ultimately it was that they did not want... They needed to take a survey.
I remember this, right.
Income survey, and they did not want to do that.
Okay.
They thought that was an infringement, so we stopped that.
Mm-hmm.
So. You have done all. I would give your department credit for the outreach you've been to one of these meetings, at least. And the fact that they're well attended, people speak their mind.
Yeah.
But I think you have such diversity and dispersed thought process, there was no critical mass to be achieved. So it's not quite Vinny Vidi Vici, but you did your best. You like that little laugh?
Woohoo!
Census, Emily.
Okay, so we worked with the assessor's office on the local update of census addresses. So we used the 911 address layer that we use and uploaded into the census software, which is called Yups. Matt Boyd from the assessor's office and I worked pretty closely on this. He's very helpful.
That was awesome.
And so we ended up submitting the LUCA update, which was just essentially a list and a map of all of our residential addresses. So the Census Bureau has reviewed that. They've been in contact with us back and forth, but I think we're good now.
Good.
So they definitely have our data. And so the next step will be that the Census Bureau will return the data to us, the process data to us, in August or September of 2019. This data will include the results of address canvassing that takes place during the summer of 2019, and then the information is provided back to us for review. We have 30 days at that time to review it, and then we send it back to review and provide feedback to the appeals office, and then census day is April 1st of 2020. So we're in a good spot. We're waiting till next summer to hear back.
Okay. The board approved a transportation impact analysis number 7, a new ordinance that we think is going to be very helpful as we review development requests, commercial, industrial development. It's also going to apply to major subdivision plats, so more than 4 lots that are being created. And so as part of the submittal, we're going to have information submitted by a professional licensed Iowa engineer on the peak travel counts, what the impact would be within the development and the impact on adjacent roads within a quarter of a mile. And depending on there'll always be the analysis, but then if it's up to 100 there's a limited analysis that's required. If it's more than 100 trips, then there's a more detailed analysis that's provided. The engineer or the board have the authority to waive any study, but the goal is to provide this, you know, real information to help us make plans for whether or not improvements need to be made to county roads. And along with that, whether or not it should be budgeted in the capital improvements planning, and how much of this would be borne by the taxpayers and how much of it would be by the actual developer. So
Jerry, I'd like to take on a real-world example here. You're looking at Dotson Farms later, okay? It's just a rezoning request and a map change right now. But at what point do we require the developer to activate this study? Or does the developer feel it's advantage? I mean, they may not be the same point, but, I mean, do we rezone a piece of property and head down the road with a preliminary plat and then a major subdivision and then have it be done? Or do we require it up front?
So the traffic impact analysis is like a brief
snapshot
of what the impact of the development will be, right. Very high level looking at it, and that's due at the same time as conceptual review.
Thank you.
The board, then following that, there would be a limited or a complete study that would take place, and that would be submitted at the same time as the preliminary plat. So it is, I think, kind of an advance.
Yes. So in this case, just so I'm clear, in this case, we would have already gotten the preliminary as part of this initial discussion, but we would not see anything further until we got further down the road, assuming this moved on. Is that right, or would we not have seen anything yet?
So far we haven't seen anything because this ordinance wasn't in place.
Yeah, but I'm saying if this ordinance had been in place, where would we be on DOT?
We would have the analysis.
The initial.
The first.
When was the effective date of our ordinance?
Gosh, November 27th.
2 weeks ago.
Okay, and the application was in before that?
Well, this is just a rezoning request. So we don't require any traffic study for a rezoning request. It'll come in with the major preliminary plat.
It's not uncommon, though, to get a rezoning and a subdivision plat at the same time. In fact, it's almost sometimes better because then you're looking at both at the same time. Mm-hmm. Because you always have those questions about what's being proposed.
My next question would be, given that this is on the west side, and like I said, I'm using it because it's a real-world example. This is on the west side of Gilbert. People are either going to shoot 170th, Linda can wave at them as they drive by, right? Okay, all right, through Gilbert, sorry. Or they're going to come down and they're going to hook up on North Dakota. Or, you know, I mean, so how far out does this traffic study announce?
Quarter mile.
Just a quarter mile. Thank you for reminding me about that.
Really, you've got that intersection right there. It's really what you're talking about.
The board does have the discretion to broaden that range if it's necessary.
Right, but it would be hard. So again, using this as a real-world example, it would be really hard to say, well, we want to broaden this to include Cameron School Road and North Dakota intersection. I mean, that's a long way.
I understand that. So thanks for reminding me because I don't remember.
You say it's a long way, but it's also the fact that's where the traffic is going to go, and it is going to have an impact.
Right. And did we ever land on, I know we had the discussions about cumulative traffic impact,
yes.
Right? You have a development here, and you have a development here, and you have a development here, but they're all going to feed the same arteries. Right?
They're going to be looking at all that, though. Okay. The information from the engineer will capture all of within a quarter of a mile if these other existing developments.
Well, I'm just saying, we look at it development by development, mm-hmm. Right? So this gets developed, and 2 years later, this gets developed, and 2 years later, this gets developed. And we look at it, this one adds 200 cars, this one adds 400 trips. This one adds 300 trips. Well, you know, now we're looking at 900 trips. And where does that cumulative traffic value feed to? You have a major corridor.
You're including that. With what's proposed, they're looking at what's now existing, right? Because they're already developed.
Okay. But I think the question is, so it's the third development
mm-hmm. that bears the brunt.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's where this takes us. But that's not a whole lot different than, as I understand it, happens in the cities. You know, as you look at the reality on the ground, you look at the projections, but if you're the last one in the pool, it's a whole different level of projections that you're dealing with and a whole different level of upgrades that you're going to have to talk about.
Right.
So in future years, we may have to look at this impact again. I mean, sorry, but for now, it's just...
We have a new ordinance.
Yeah, right now, we don't require any information to be submitted.
All right, so baby steps.
Yeah. And it was vetted by the county engineer and his assistant.
I understand.
Yeah. As a developer, I wouldn't want to have to do a traffic analysis if I was trying to get a piece of land rezoned until why go to all that expense and then not get a rezoning?
Mm-hmm.
That was
right.
The DOT will be doing your... It's a four-year refresh, and they'll be doing traffic counts in 2019. So we will get an opportunity to see that, which is as opposed to anecdotal or speculation. And they'll give you some tangibles to work with.
Jerry, to follow up kind of on what you said, I think that's an important thing. You might say, well, if we're not going to approve it because of the impact, why did we rezone it in the first place? Well, we're not rezoning just for a developer.
Right.
I mean, it may... That may be the impetus of it. That may be why we're looking at it. But when we look at anything, we should say it's not just, here's a developer who wants this, so are we going to consider it? We should be looking at the land itself. We should be looking at everything we've got in front of us and saying, is this an appropriate use for this land with everything that's surrounding it, regardless of whether or not there's somebody interested in it? Doesn't make sense to you.
I don't disagree with that.
Okay.
But I'm just saying to have to do a impact study on traffic before you get the zoning done. You could take a piece of land here. You want to put 80 lots on it. First, you got to get rezoned from agriculture to living edge. If you don't get that done, that's over. So you get it done, and then they say no. That's not going to work. It's going to cause too much traffic. Mm-hmm. So I got to go 40 lots. So I got to go 20 lots. But there's no sense doing the impact study until you know whether or not you're going to get land. You can always stop the number of lots or reduce it.
Thank you.
Shall I move forward?
Yes.
Okay. Tier 1, first item, construction demolition. We were to find some land. Help in case we have a disaster, that we have a place to bring materials to, sort them, process them, and we still don't have anything. Amelia has been the project lead on this. We had two property owners who were interested to a point and then decided that they weren't interested because one was, I think, the amount of money. And the other one was the concern that after heavy equipment is on the land, it wouldn't be as productive. So we've had some discussions with Keith, Mike, and Darren, trying to figure out, okay, where do we go from here? I think half of them think that there still might be a possibility to rent land or lease land. I don't think that that's a viable thing. We sent out mailings a couple of different times, and we got two people who were interested. The requirements that the state has are very stringent, and there's only just a handful of select areas because we want to locate on, you know, paved or close to proximity to
paved through for away from water and
for access. Got to be away from floodplains,
right.
Daycares, dwellings, that kind of thing. So. Keith suggested maybe contacting and working with Ames and or Nevada and maybe doing a joint project that way, whether it be a lease agreement or an ownership agreement. So we, again, got some work to do, but January, February, we'd like to have something, you know, concrete that we can bring to the P&Z and to the board. Mm-hmm. So
well,
every spring I get
on our approach basis, I would ask because
just with, if the conversation had come up and I was party to it, it's just like, is there any remuneration on a yearly basis to have this property held in this capacity to a landowner? Is it worth their time, or do they get paid only when it gets used?
What we were proposing is we would pay them if we use it. We were going to give them median, whatever the median
cash rent,
would be.
But I think we were open to, you know, we were working with Ethan on it, negotiating. But I think the issue is the state that would be left after the site.
I think that's the biggest issue. To get anybody interested, I think that you would have to be talking some substantial money. I mean, you see land rented for wind towers. You see land rented for the Alliant purchase through the East annexation. There are dollars being expended that nothing happens virtually. And if you're not going to the table with that, I suspect you probably aren't going to have an update.
Sure. Silver Bales is another
example. Good example.
Yep. So how, I guess, estimated cost on a rental, what do you think if we were paying for an ongoing lease?
You're looking for an option.
Right.
You're an option to use it. Not that the likelihood is probably not great, but the thing is, in the event, you want to be able to say, here it happens.
I just wondered if staff...
The scary part of all this is if we don't have a site and something comes through Cambridge or Iowa Center or Fernald and we're dealing with a whole bunch of rubble, we've got nowhere to go.
With the administrator at Boone Landfill, they said, you're not bringing it here because we don't have any place.
We've got nowhere to go, and so now we're looking at the parking lot at East Peterson Pit. We're looking across the street from Marty Chitty's house.
No, thanks.
Seriously. I mean, you're looking at the shooting range. You're looking at those areas in order to stage this stuff, and it's a bad option if we don't. Well, I mean, no, but where else are you going to go?
That's right.
Well, I get that, but that's once again, I would like to prime the pump in the sense as this commission, board, talks about this to be able to give themselves the resource to do something. Mm-hmm. Are you prepared to commit the dollars to get the buy-in from the property owner you don't now have? Because the thing is, you don't want to be chasing this outcome, not knowing where it's at, and I'll leave it at that for you to
talk
about.
Right, but what our hope was going into this process is that we would identify a few landowners that were willing to negotiate with us, and we did. We found a little tiny opening that closed fast, and so we're back at kind of square one, but I think what I'm hearing is we need to be looking at this more as county ownership of something that may be county ownership that we're leasing back.
Why not use existing county?
Most of our stuff's floodplain.
Yeah. So you can't
we can't do this in a floodplain. You've got to do it outside of floodplain.
We looked at that property.
We looked at a couple properties. The only one that almost met requirements ended up having a cemetery on it, so that didn't meet requirements.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's a deal.
Generally, when we own it, we've got native prairie. We've got something.
Right. I would do it for less than $5,000 an acre, period.
Yep.
Right next to you.
You're the property owner in the
that's
sense
what
that you
get
would be
for the windmill.
You have a current address.
What would you need for the option on it?
On a yearly basis,
year to year, just
how many acres?
Just to say,
before it actually kicks in.
They said 20.
20 an acre?
At least 20.
20 acres.
No, I mean, what would you need per acre to have that option?
To just have the insurance.
It may never happen.
You're doing the gamble.
So you want to pay
because we weren't going to pay unless we were going to use it.
Yes.
You're not going to pay the landowner anything unless you use it.
That's what we started, and we didn't get a counter. We didn't get a counter.
That failed. You got that right.
Shocking. Well, we were waiting for a counter, and that never happened.
An option, basically.
We started here.
If we need it, how much money do you need per acre to enter into that agreement?
To just hold it.
So you're looking at
like 10% of the cash rent.
$5,000.
That would not. If it's $400 cash rent, that I wouldn't do it for that.
Right. Yeah, you're giving up a lot of that.
Even if
tax.
You still have use of it.
No, because you know what? The crop could be out there, and you can say you're coming in July. And who's going to pay for that crop?
I'd make that part of the option price. Or the thing is, you bought this crop, I did not harvest.
Not part of the option, but part of the actual use.
Exactly. Yes. Well, yeah, that's you were told the agreement. You did the agreement.
Okay. The crop damage.
Yes.
All right. We were thinking the applicant would go to the next and provide a counter, and he never did.
And then is there additional, if there is that kind of situation, Is there additional money besides the replacement of the crop if it's actually used?
There have to be, because then you have a big zero in your crop insurance, and you have for 10 years, and so you're going to have to add money for that.
For 10 years?
It's a 10-year APH, yes.
So we have 6 minutes.
Yep.
Yeah. I think we've almost got a deal with Kathy.
Are you saying you're interested? Is that
no.
Yeah.
But I think this is
hard to commit to something like that.
I think we're better at it.
I think all of these are things that
we're
going to bring in.
If we're not done, why don't we just fight it here? Let's make a purchase on Fernald.
Jerry and Kathy.
Is there any just really planned in the county?
How you could structure it.
For some reason isn't good English for anything else, it's not for an agricultural, and just hold on to.
You keep shrinking the pool with every little caveat.
I know.
So the other option that I would like us to approach and see is there some big corporate that maybe is doing some kind of big mining activity right off the edge of I-35 that would be willing on an option basis to have, because right now they're keeping a big giant pile of gravel.
We can ask again.
This flyover is one of the part of the material that we're going to be transporting. All right, let's go.
This is why this is on.
We have like 4 minutes. Did you want me to go through any more of these? Do you have questions about it?
So these are all items that we talked about a year ago that we put on here. I don't see anything proposed new coming on. So I think the question I would ask is, does anybody, commission or board of supervisors, see anything that we need to discuss? Or are there any issues that aren't on here that we think are worth us discussing getting on here in our remaining 3.5 minutes?
I just have a question. Everyone, high priorities, completion by March 1. Is that completion to put before the PMZ, or is that completion having run us all the way through to the Board of Supervisors and activated?
Well, we're shooting for all the way completely done.
Thank you.
Okay. But please, let's put March 1st in quotation marks. Okay.
Air quotes.
I'd be happy if it actually, if that was staff completion.
Yep.
I think that's more realistic.
And I think with, because you're now looking at, you have January and February meetings in order to get those done.
Mm-hmm. My thought, though, Mark, is that if we could have the stormwater ordinance-related things in place for the 2019 construction season.
Quick on stormwater. I think with the watershed assessment, a lot of the questions that were raised by PCC allow us to kind of dig into when a stormwater grading permit may be required, because we now have better data on, what streams are priority streams, where groundwater impact areas are, that we can now use as thresholds in those ordinances to solve a lot of the issues with impacting natural areas that we had before. So I think we're in good shape there.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's my only question.
Good.
I have one question then.
Yep.
Does the board feel that you hired a firm to do this C2C program? Do you feel that was money well spent? Excuse me, I can't talk. Money well spent? You think you got your money's worth out of that?
So I'll speak for me personally. I think we absolutely did. But what I want to caution everybody is, I feel from time to time, I'll feel people want to take our C2C as absolute gospel. Every word in it is, this is the way it is. And I don't believe that it was ever intended. I don't believe we commissioned it as that. I don't think it was written as that. I think it was written as a big framework, more of a 15,000 to 30,000 foot look. And so when we get down to ground level, and I'm thinking of some of the mapping that we have in there, and things, what we're seeing is our maps don't quite line up. They're close, but they don't quite line up with the realities on the ground. And if you try to take what's in there as this is the hard and fast gospel, and if the line's there, that means the line is right there, regardless of what the reality is, I think we're making a huge mistake. But there's no way we get to this framework without going out, without running it external like we did. And I think the benefits that I'm seeing from it
which I see a lot of, are far outweighing the negatives, and I'm seeing a few of those. And the primary negatives that I'm seeing are when we try to take this as it is hard and fast, this is the way it is. It, to me, it's intended to spur the discussion and spur how we make decisions. It's not intended to say, here, you want the decision, open to page 52 and look right here. Here's the decision.
No, but I think there are common themes that really run. I mean, it's that. So I, sitting from the outside, because I declined to participate in that part of it. I participated in the earlier, like the strategic plan discussion, et cetera. But for me, looking at it from the outside, is I think the money was well set because it established those areas of concern and theme. It's to point to and say, look, this is a consistent message throughout about this particular resource or this particular theory.
Public input that we wouldn't have gotten otherwise. We get prioritization and identification of what different areas and what the public thought were important. Right?
We wouldn't have gotten that otherwise. I got to see in the remarks that were generated that I probably likely would have not seen, because it was kind of illuminating to see where people were looking at in regards to a voluminous document. And I share Rick's belief, and I think Lawrence's too, in the sense it's an evolving, living document. It's not designated to say it's got a back door. Yeah, it's a back door. It is a touch point. It is a guidepost, but it is not an actual. We have the latitude through, as we change and do and value or discard, we have the ability to move in this direction. But we have given the opportunity to the public can see on an identification basis that which we propose and are likely to do.
Yeah, I think it should not be viewed as making the recommendation or making the decision. It should be viewed as helping to inform whatever recommendation is made and ultimately whatever decision is made. I'm curious to hear what you think. What do you think it was worth us putting? You served on the commission before we had it and now after we have it. What do you think?
I don't even know what it cost us.
$70,000.
Yeah, we spent $70,000.
I would say it was worth that.
Okay.
Does the board still want us to bring residential parcel subdivisions? Those are pretty simple, straightforward. It's a matter of meeting all the requirements.
Yeah, so I would suggest you bring that to the board in January. How is this board going to operate? Sure. Let us get our feet under it. Unders for just a little bit and say, this is the process we've used in the past. Here's staff's recommendation. Here's why it's our recommendation, and let the board decide.
Good. Thank you.
Yep. Yeah. Anything else we need to talk about as we push your 5 o'clock?
Yeah.
That's it. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Good meeting.
Yeah.
More, what's going on?
Can we get a roll call vote, please? Or a roll call?
Oh, okay, good.
Steele.
Here.
Cable.
Here.
McBride absent. Merkin.
Here.
Smith.
Here.
Mins.
Here.
Sherwood absent.
Okay, thanks everybody for being patient with us. We had a joint session with the Board of Supervisors before that ran a little long. Let's see. We need to approve the agenda. Are there any additions or changes to tonight's agenda? Hearing none, the agenda will stand approved. And please consider the minutes from our last meeting in November 7th, 2018. Are there any changes or additions to the minutes? Hearing none, the minutes will stand approved. We do have open time for public comment right now. If you want to address the commission on any topic that is not already scheduled to be heard tonight, now would be your opportunity to raise any issues. Step up to the podium. Okay. We are on to item 11-1, election of officers for the 2019 calendar year. Jerry, what do we need to elect?
A chair and a vice chair.
Do we have any nominations for...
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to nominate Mr. Smith as chairman.
I'll second it.
All right, we have a Motion by Cable, second by Mims, to nominate Marvin Smith as chair for 2019. Any discussion on the motion?
I have a question. What is it? Other than what we see here, what is the required or involved?
You're looking at it.
You're looking at it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. On a related note, though, we probably will eventually need to appoint a new representative to the
CAPO committee,
Master Matrix Committee. But that doesn't automatically come with the job.
Okay.
I'm sure it's available if you want it. All right. We have a motion by Cable and a second by Mims. Can we get a roll call vote, please? Pardon me. Let's just do a voice vote on that. All in favor? Aye.
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 All opposed? Same sign. Carried unanimously. Do we have any nominations for vice chair?
Yes, I'd like to nominate Kathy Mims as vice chair.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
We have a motion by Merkin and a second by Smith to nominate Kathy Mims as vice chair. Any discussion on the motion?
Yeah. I've only been on this 1 year, so I feel that I'm not qualified quite yet.
Okay. The nomination is declined. Is there a motion to nominate another member as vice chair?
I will nominate Jerry, as he is currently serving as the vice chair and has done a fine job in here when you've been absent.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
We have a motion by Smith and a second by Mims to nominate Jerry Cable as the vice chair. Any discussion on the motion? You get a voice vote, please. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Very good. Meeting schedule for the Planning Commission for 2019. Are there any comments on this? Any comments on meeting schedule?
No, we don't have any. All the suggestions. You should have a copy of it.
Does this work out for you, Jerry? Okay.
If it works out for us, okay.
Okay.
Right. First Wednesday.
Jerry, my first Wednesday of last month. Same time.
We need a motion to approve meeting schedule.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Cable and second by Mims to approve 2019 meeting schedule. Voice vote, please. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Now we have discussion and consideration of the Countywide Watershed Assessment Implementation. Leanne Hart.
Good evening. I've been to you guys before. It was a few weeks ago with an update on where we are on the Watershed Assessment Implementation Matrix. Tonight I want to just start by going over some review questions that you all have a copy in front of you, or you should. It has a blue, it says discussion questions. The front page one are the questions that we originally asked via the SurveyMonkey. The reverse are some questions that I'm going to quickly say to you, and then as I go through review of the matrix, I hope you consider and keep in mind. One, do you think that the time frames are reasonable and achievable? Second, is there a county office, department, and or outside organization that should administer all aspects in the matrix? Specifically looking at, is this a county staff person, existing, or potentially a new one, and including an outside or agency or organization? The third question that I hope you can keep in mind as we have our discussion this evening, how do these projects compare to other current and proposed projects in terms of importance? And I'm not going to ask you to rate from one high, five low, or one low, five high. Just keep that in mind. And then lastly, what are other water quality improvements and practices we should consider that are not represented in the matrix? And I ask you to keep those in mind tonight. We also have a hard copy. So if you leave this evening and want to do additional reading and homework, and you want to get that back to me, I'd appreciate it. That'd be great. You can email it or call me or come visit me. Because of the timing, we had hoped to have that joint meeting with the Story County Conservation Board. Unfortunately, we cannot get a quorum of both, so that did not occur. But Michael Cox, who's the director of Story County Conservation Board, did have an opportunity to share these questions with the Conservation Board, too. So I'm going to just spend a couple minutes just giving you some feedback that they have received. They will be meeting next Monday. And then the process from there, it will go to the planning... Sorry, you're the Planning and Zoning Commission, the Board of Supervisors, on December 18th. If you'll recall, when I was here earlier, we were trying to be done by right now so that we could build these things into the budget. Mr. Cox and I met today, and we are kind of going ahead with that anyway. Just budgets are due this Friday for the preliminary budget estimate. So slap me on the hand, slap Mike on the hand, but we did build in some amounts you see in the respective budgets. So just quickly on the discussion questions, just so you have a sense of what others responded to. I'm not going to talk about the ones from the SurveyMonkey. I shared those responses with you last time we met. We have not received any more on the SurveyMonkey questions. But the other discussion questions that were staff developed and then sent to the Conservation Board, one of the responses for the time frames reasonable and achievable. The individual said none were listed in the implementation matrix, and this is before we had the time frames added. But he did go on to say, however, time frames are seldom realistic, but they are a good start. We'll never know until we try. The next one, is there a county office department, county staff person? This is a big job. I believe strongly that there needs to be a Story County employee who heads this up and does a lion's share of the implementation. I believe, given the scope and control of the job, that the position should lie within Story County Conservation Department. That said, clearly other departments must also be strong partners in the process. Also, there are numerous opportunities for NGOs, other organizations, agencies, universities, etc., to participate. There's plenty, all caps, of work to go around and to be done. Prairie Rivers or other similar organizations will need to have specific contracts and scopes of work for some portions of this implementation, but the buck stops with the county, so the overall coordination should be done by a county employee, again, preferably under Story County Conservation auspices. It will need to be a new position, as all current employees of Story County Conservation have very full plates. Also, no one current person has the necessary expertise. And I do believe, prior to reading this, like I said, Mike and I met earlier today, his budget request to the board will be to add another position, a new position. So that may be what is in response to this comment. The next one is, how do you rate in terms of importance? He gave a 4 to 5 and did comment, Story County is a leader in the state and needs to demonstrate strong leadership on the issue. The watershed assessment was a demonstration of that leadership. Now we need to continue that by carrying through with implementation. And then he just said, see my note above on the first question for the last question. Nancy Franz as well, who serves on the Conservation Board, did just comment the priorities again on the SurveyMonkey, and those were reflected in the previous comments. So I just wanted to at least share with you the comments we've received thus far from the Conservation Board. Again, they meet next Monday, so following tonight and our discussion tonight, I'll share that with Mike so he can share that with the Conservation Board Monday. So we can try to, while you can't jointly meet together, we at least can try to keep the conversation between the two groups going and have an understanding where both are coming from. You all have a copy of the draft matrix as well. It's the bigger document. Just how it's changed since last time you saw it, based on the feedback we received at the last meeting I was before you, as well as the Conservation Board, prioritizations and priorities were given. If you look at page 7, it does give you a sense of what we use to identify. I can get there. A low priority was deemed had kind of three criteria. One, steps for which previous efforts had been made or slowed. Steps outside the county's ability to affect. So it's the last page of the packet. If you go on the very flip the packet over all the way. It's P-date, actually. No one caught that till just now. And long time frame. And we related this back to the cornerstone to capstone comprehensive plan. The long time frame for implementation items in that plan is 6 to 10 years. So we brought that forward to maintain consistency among the planning guidance documents for Story County. The medium priority items are, again, three criterion: steps necessary for impactful water quality or flood mitigation improvements, but not required for subsequent action step implementation; secondary actions that will benefit from high priority work items when completed; and lastly, the medium time frame, again, the C2C plan of 3 to 5 years. Those high priority items you see throughout the matrix, the project is underway. Other items rely on that step. So it either sets the groundwork or it's related to something else that's in the matrix. Steps will provide measurable results. Steps address known areas of great significant concerns and will have countywide outcomes. And lastly, relating back to the C2C plan, it's either an immediate time frame or a medium time frame on the C2C plan. It might start and then go on to that 3 to 5 years. That's why we incorporated both there. So the time frames were added, or the priorities were added, and through that, some element of the time frame. We also really tried hard to come up with some budget numbers. At least those that we knew internally as staff we could develop. And that, and whether or not there is an identified funding source available. And so you'll see those two columns as well. Those are different from the last time you saw it. There are some areas that we just put the TBD, and I shared that as a concern with you last time, that we're not educated enough yet to determine what the potential budgetary cost may be. So that is a to be determined.
But given the time frames, if they're a medium or a low, you'll have time to develop those, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Or even if they're a high, if it's not this year, you can put it in next year.
Yeah. And it goes back to where, ultimately, where does this rest and who's the management, or wherein does the management lie of it and responsibility, so that they have the ability to delve into that aspect of it. So, again, I mentioned the questions. If you are able, like in the next few days, to read over those and you want to share additional concerns with me, let me know, give me a call, or email them to me. I don't think, Aaron, you really don't expect me to go through action step by action step, do you?
No.
The action steps have not changed. We did change some of the wording of them because they were kind of wonky. I mean, just really cleaned it up a little bit. And, like, I need to obviously fix the footer on all the pages and reference page 8 rather than page 7 for the priorities. My hope that we could keep a shorter document, but apparently I added another page. Are there any questions? I mean, I'm here to answer whatever you need answered to the best of my ability.
I don't have a question other than a comment that I like this output following on the meeting that we had out by the Purple Park, right? We were out there at the. So I like the additional information about the funding and responsibility. Good.
Are there any actions that have a defined or an estimated budget but do not have a funding source identified?
I don't think so. I think the only time, that's a very good question. No, there are not.
If we wanted to know what the funding source was, and that's what too much detail, but this has publication, we can contact you and get an idea. That doesn't ensure funding, it just means you've identified a viable source.
And that. For those items for which there's an estimated budget amount, if it's a high priority item, they will be built into the fiscal year 20 planning process, budgeting planning process through the Board of Supervisors. I just on a couple of items, action steps 1.2 and then 2.14. These deal specifically with floodplain management. So when the working group drafted this document, we put them as high priorities, and we were under the understanding that we would be getting new floodplain maps somewhere in 2020. On November 15th, we got the new floodplain maps, and we're in the 30-day review period right now. That this is our only opportunity to provide comment. So these are definitely priority items, and if we would put them medium, I would be here making a really strong case to have them high. But it just I bring that up to note this has to be an evolving document, just like our C2C plan. And this ultimately will get, just like the assessment, get built into our implementation matrix and the plan itself for the C2C plan as an appendix, and it should all complement each other. But we were really kind of caught off guard when that those several rolls of maps showed up at the door. It's a good thing, but
any other questions for Dan? Dan, what kind of action would you like from us?
Ideally, like direction to the board for in the form of recommendation to the Board of Supervisors.
To officially adopt it into this as an appendix to the CTC plan.
Okay. What were you
saying? I was just going to say, and then they can get these comments.
Yeah.
Also.
And then what were you saying?
You're looking for a recommendation to the board to officially adopt it into the CTC plan as an appendix?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that covered?
Yeah, or, yeah. Because actually in February on your agenda will be amendments to C2C plan.
Okay.
So you'll be formally recommending adoption of the amendments to C2C plan at that point. Maybe just recommending to the board that they go forward with the countywide assessment implementation matrix as drafted.
Okay.
Would be a more general one for now.
Okay.
But I like the direction in which you're headed.
Okay.
That's the ultimate goal.
Leanne? Discussion questions. Discussion for whom and when?
These are for... these are food for thought from like this point forward.
You're not asking this body to debate these and spend a lot of time tonight and give you reactions?
No, because it's not fair. You're just saying them tonight.
Okay, so it could be individual to you. People could get to you and say, here's what I think about certain time frames or whatever. Okay, that would be good. Thank you.
And again, this will be before the board on the 18th. December. Board of Supervisors.
Do a motion.
I move that based on our prior meetings with the watershed group and their action plans, that we recommend that the Board of Supervisors approve their action plan as prioritized.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion by Smith, a second by Merkin. Any discussion on the motion? Give a roll call, please.
Smith.
Yes.
Finn.
Yes.
Gable.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
Merkin.
Yes.
Great.
Thank you. And I do want to have the opportunity to thank both Linda and Aaron for your years of service. Putting my planner hat on, it's much appreciated by Story County. I know you've already heard that a couple times tonight, but I've had the wonderful opportunity to work with both of you in this capacity, and good luck.
Thank you.
I will be working with you.
We'll see you.
Very good. Then we are moving on to our public hearings. Beginning with rezoning 04-18, the previous Dotson Farms rezoning. Emily is going to walk us through the staff report. We do need to pause and take a moment for anyone on the commission to disclose if they've had any ex parte communications about the rezoning that's before us tonight.
any information that has been given to you by the applicants or other sources that aren't available. I haven't been available to the public in general.
Yes, I have. I was contacted by a developer to have a discussion, and we discussed some aspects of it. I was also contacted by some neighbors who live directly north of the property, and I received a couple of emails from the mayor of Gilbert, who was just inquiring whether I'd heard about it, and I forwarded all of those written communications to our planning director, so he has those on file.
Thank you. Any other disclosures? Very good. Emily, it's all yours.
Okay. So the request we have before you today is a rezoning request. This also includes a C2C plan future land use map amendment request. The applicant is Kurt Friedrich. The property owner is Robert Dotson, the Dotson Family Trust. This property is located in Section 7 of Franklin Township. It's located on the south side of 170th Street and on the east side of 500th Avenue, which is the Story Boone County Line Road. The city of Gilbert is within the 2-mile buffer of the proposed subdivision. The districts involved are the Gilbert Fire Association, the ambulance is Mary Greeley, sheriff is Story County. The school district for this area is Gilbert Community School District. Electric is provided by Midland Power, and water is through Xenia Rural Water. So again, the request here is for rezoning from the A1 Agricultural District to the R1 Transitional Residential District. The applicant is also requesting a C2C future land use map amendment from the Agricultural Conservation Area to the Rural Residential Area. The subject property is approximately 160 gross acres. The request has been submitted to accommodate a proposed major residential subdivision to be located on the northwestern, northeastern, and southeastern quarters of the property. I would note, though, that application would be coming in the future. So today, while you do have a concept drawing for the proposed subdivision, we are focusing on the rezoning and the C2C plan amendment. Here's just a brief concept plan. The four quarters, this is 170th Street, 500th Avenue. This is provided by the applicant. They're currently showing 80 lots for the proposed subdivision. So this property is located in Franklin Township on the kind of northwestern corner of the township. The city of Gilbert is located here, and the city of Ames boundary is here. The subject property is 1.5 miles west of the city of Gilbert along 170th Street. In terms of surrounding land use, it's primarily agricultural land, a lot of large lot residential, farmsteads, that sort of land use. There is a subdivision located in Boone County, which is 1/3 of a mile north of the subject property and on the west side of 500th Avenue. Eagle Ridge subdivision is located in Story County, about 1/4 mile to the south of the subject property. Looking at surrounding land use, the subject property is located here. There is a portion of the approximately southwestern quarter of the subject property is covered by the Squaw Creek floodplain. There is some floodplain along the western edge as well. Eagle Ridge subdivision is located directly south of that floodplain. There is one single-family dwelling on approximately 50 acres located between, and then another single-family dwelling also on approximately 50-55 acres directly south of the subject property. Development, of course, is strongly discouraged within the floodplain, but the concept plan that has been submitted by the applicant shows development in the northwestern quarter, northeastern quarter, and the southeastern quarter. A
looking at the adjacent land use, the character of the area is really agriculture, like we said, farmsteads. There are five single-family dwellings within a quarter mile, and these are located on lots over 6 acres to 50 acres in size. The current use of the property, these are provided by the applicant. There is a permanent and long-term pasture located on 66 acres that extends kind of from the northwestern corner to the southeastern corner of the property. There are approximately 25 acres in the northeastern quarter that are currently in hay production, and then about 19 acres along the eastern edge, which is currently in row crop production. It was in corn in 2018. There are approximately 41 acres located in this, the lowest part of the subject property here in the northwestern corner, that have been ceded to long-term prairie through the CRP program. And the remainder of the property is stream channel. There's some stream channel along the right-of-way of 500th Avenue. And then there's a pretty steep ravine that comes down the center of it, of the property. Looking at the zoning map, surrounding the subject property is all A1 agricultural zoning. The Eagle Ridge subdivision, approximately a quarter mile to the south of the subject property, is zoned AR, and then we have some R1 zoning further south. Again, the existing zoning is A1 agricultural. So in terms of the existing and proposed zoning, the agricultural district has an intent of land uses compatible with agriculture, protecting agricultural land from urban land uses, encroachment, development encroachment. The proposed district, the R1 transitional residential district, is intended for single-family detached dwellings between a rural and urban density, filling that space in the market. And there should also be special provisions to protect the residential character of the district. This is our C2C future land use map designations of the property. The base designation is the agricultural conservation area. We do have a natural resource overlay on this property. As you can see, it is very general, and we will get into that in a little bit here. So highlights of the existing and proposed designations. Agricultural conservation area, again, conserving agricultural land. Encourage high-value lands to remain as agriculture. Limit conflicts between agricultural uses and rural residences. Promote the continued health of agriculture in Story County. The rural residential area to which the applicant is requesting a designation change has principles such as new development should be sensitive to the predominantly rural nature of the area, encourage clustering of residential sites, ensure that conflicts are minimized between agricultural and residential development, provide buffers to minimize the conflicts, encourage development to take place off of existing paved roads, and then to mitigate and manage stormwater runoff, soil erosion, and wastewater discharge. So as we saw in the C2C future land use map, there is the natural resource area overlay located on this property. So within this, we're asked to generally discourage development, mitigate the impacts of proposed development to adjacent natural resource areas, consider areas identified as a natural resource area for inclusion in the Greenbelt Conservation District, and then develop site planning and performance standards to apply to properties that do have the natural resource area designation. As a part of the application,
The applicant did submit a field survey. Based on the generality of our natural resource layer map, and then also discussions that took place at our conceptual review meeting, there was a field survey completed on the site by Dr. Thomas Frostberg, who is a professor of ecology and botany at Drake University. This took place on October 15th, and he was accompanied by Mike Cox, the conservation director, and then also representatives from Cox Engineering. Because of the date of the survey, this was just a late season plant survey, and I just highlighted here the three takeaways, the three points of conclusion from the survey. There's a significant native prairie component on this site. The south and west facing slopes are the most important locations supporting these prairie remnant populations. And the full extent of the quality of the prairie remnants cannot fully be determined at this point due to the lateness of the season. The full report provided by Dr. Rosberg is on the Agenda Center. So also included as part of the report was mapping of where these prairie remnants were located. So as you can see, they're located mostly along the sloped areas of the property. This area is the highest of the property, and this is the lowest here. So you can imagine the land falling to the southwest there. Here's an oblique imagery in an attempt to show you the topography of the site. Again, this is the lowest area, the floodplain area. This is also low up in the northwest corner. The pasture is the highest area and also the steepest, and then the farm ground to the northeast is also higher than the floodplain down here. Looking at site photos, this is looking northeast from 500th Avenue. This is the floodplain area here, and looking up to the pasture there. This is looking east from 500th Avenue, again, the southwest quarter of the floodplain area. This is looking southeast from 500th Avenue toward the southwest quarter. Looking east from 500th Avenue along 170th here. This is the subject property located here. This is looking south from 170th Street along 500th Avenue. Again, the subject property is here. This is looking southwest from 500th Avenue along 170th Street. This is the adjacent property. It's a large lot residential parcel, and that's on the Boone County side of 500th Avenue. This is looking west from 500th Avenue along 170th Street, and then looking north along 500th Avenue. And then this is looking northeast from 500th Avenue. 170th Street is here, and this is the property located directly to the north of the subject property. The subject property would be here. So now these images are moving east along 170th. So if you can imagine, this is looking southwest at the subject property. Again, southwest. There are several cows grazing, cattle grazing in this image. They're hard to see. The pasture area. This is looking south from the subject, or from 170th Street. This is about the center of the property, looking south again. And then looking south at the row crop areas. This is the very eastern edge of the property. And then looking southwest at the whole property there. This is looking northeast from 170th Street at the farmstead directly to the north. And then the property to the north. And then this is looking west along 170th Street toward 500th Avenue, which is here. So in terms of our rezoning standards for approval, the first thing to consider is if the proposed rezoning conforms to the Story County Cornerstone to Capstone Comprehensive Plan. Looking at the zoning compatibility matrix taken from the C2C plan, the existing designation is the agricultural conservation area. The proposed is the rural residential area, which is consistent within the AR, R1, R2, and residential manufactured home districts, and also the residential residential conservation design overlay district. We'll get more into the C2C map amendment below coming up here. The second item is that the proposed rezoning shall conform to the statement of intent for the proposed district and the district requirements. We believe, staff believes that a majority of the proposed use does align with the R1 transitional residential district. The intent of that district is for single family residential development. The minimum lot size would be 25,000 square feet. The applicant did consider requesting an AR agricultural residential designation, which has a 1 acre minimum lot size, but they ultimately chose to request the R1 residential district in order to have a greater variety of lot sizes and also through smaller lot configuration better preserve the natural and environmentally sensitive areas on the property. The proposed use of the environmentally sensitive areas of the subject property, which were on the steep slopes and the southwestern quarter, are intended to be used as open space, as recreation area, stormwater management area, is not consistent with the R1 transitional residential district. In addition to preserving and maintaining the environmentally sensitive areas of the site, they are intended to be used for open space, for erosion control, drainage, water retention. So these are permitted in and more closely aligned with the statement of intent for the Greenbelt Conservation Zoning District. The statement of intent for this district is the conservation of lands containing sensitive environmental conditions, reasonable economic use of the property while preserving the natural resources, providing recreational assets, promoting water quality and conservation, and looking at aquifers, soils, slopes, areas that have outstanding scenic vegetation, wildlife habitat, travel corridors, geological and historic or recreational value. So the applicant has also indicated interest in working with the Story County Conservation Board to create a management or an ownership agreement for the environmentally sensitive areas on the subject property in order to provide the best preservation and maintenance of these areas. An arrangement of this sort would be more effective than method of preserving these resources than placing that responsibility for the maintenance of these areas on future residents or a homeowners association. Further, we might note that if left in an agricultural land use under private ownership, it would be difficult or improbable to enforce any preservation of these environmentally sensitive areas. So planning and development staff recommends requiring the applicant to
request a rezoning of the southwest quarter of the subject property and the other environmentally sensitive areas located on the subject property to the Greenbelt Conservation District as a part of the subdivision plat submittal when that takes place. The goal of the rezoning would be to provide the highest level of protection to the environmentally sensitive areas. Staff also recommends requiring the applicant to make a management and or ownership agreement with Story County Conservation that will best preserve and maintain those identified environmentally sensitive areas on the property. The third thing we look at is that if the proposed rezoning shall be compatible with the surrounding land uses and development patterns. The existing character of the surrounding area is primarily, again, agricultural parcels and large lot residential. A third of a mile to the north on the Boone County side of 500th Avenue is Buckhill Estates. There's two additions to that. It's over a third of a mile to the north. And there's newer dwellings on large lots here. The lot sizes range from just over an acre to about 8 acres in size. There's paved roads, no curbs, and it's served with propane gas service. Looking in Story County, then, approximately a quarter mile to the south is the Eagle Ridge subdivision that was recorded in 2006. This is zoned AR, agricultural residential. The total area in the subdivision is one quarter, and this the subdivision contains 14 lots on which 13 dwellings have been constructed. These lot sizes range from just over an acre to 1.71 net acres. So the remainder of, if you'll remember, the Eagle Ridge subdivision is located just to the south of the floodplain. The remainder of the subdivision that is not in residential lots is in an outlot and is primarily located within the floodplain. Since development is strongly discouraged within the floodplain, it could be determined that the subject property is surrounding to the existing development Eagle Ridge as the development is located
directly on the south side of the floodplain.
So here's the subject property here. The proposed development would be happening here, and then the Eagle Ridge subdivision is directly to the south. So based on the character of Eagle Ridge subdivision, planning and development staff recommend a condition stating that the overall density of the proposed rezoning area shall not be greater than 14 lots per quarter. This is equivalent to 56 lots on the subject property. It's consistent with Eagle Ridge subdivision to the south and more dense than Buckhill Estates in Boone County to the north. It should be noted, though, that a future rezoning request or an amendment to the zoning could be made by the applicant to remove this density condition if future development nearby or on adjacent properties takes place, changing the overall character of the surrounding area. So the fourth standard looks at the natural resource area and how to preserve that. Based on the plant survey completed by Dr. Rosberg, we know there are remnant prairie species present on the site. We also know that it was specific to the late season species, and so further inventory must be completed to determine the areas most important to preserve and then any other natural resources located on the property. Planning and development staff and Story County Conservation supports further collaboration to identify the locations of environmentally sensitive areas on the subject property as a condition of this rezoning request. One of principle three of the natural resource area designation states that areas should be rezoned as Greenbelt Conservation Area. Those designated as natural resource areas should be rezoned as the Greenbelt Conservation designation to further protect the natural resources. So we're recommending a condition that the southwest quarter and also the other identified natural resource, the environmentally sensitive areas of this site, are rezoned as Greenbelt Conservation District and designated as agricultural conservation area and the natural resource area on the C2C future land use map. And that should be requested at the time of the subdivision plat. The concept plan for the future subdivision application, as well as the application narrative, indicates that it's in the intent of the applicant to use the conservation subdivision design principles in the platting of the proposed subdivision. Due to the environmentally sensitive areas on the site, the subject property is not appropriate for normal, traditional, large lot subdivision. So in order to ensure that the future subdivision plat maintains these conservation principles, Story County Planning and Development staff recommend a condition of the rezoning approval that would require a future subdivision plat submittal for this property to meet the requirements of of one section of our RC overlay district, which is the Residential Conservation Design Overlay District. And that's number 4A, 1 through 7, as follows. The proposed rezoning shall protect environmental resources. And then, so in terms of design and improvement requirements, no land shall be developed which is held to be unsuitable for any proposed use if identified as being environmentally sensitive. Areas identified as being environmentally sensitive include wetlands, hydric soils, native prairie remnants, significant trees and tree cover, slopes greater than 14%, areas that provide habitat for rare, threatened, or endangered species, burial or Native American mounds, and then drainage ways. There is also a requirement that a 30-foot buffer along each side of a drainage way be maintained. So these are basic requirements that will ensure the future subdivision plat submittal maintains the conservation principles intended by the applicant and shown on the submitted concept drawing. This allows those things to be maintained without adding additional requirements that are normally a part of the RC overlay district, including but not limited to certain landscaping, sidewalks, and other infrastructure improvements. The fifth item, in areas where the petition to rezone requests a change from the A1 district or the A2 district to another district, land scoring 267 or above for the total LISA score shall not be approved. So we ran the LISA scores for all four of these quarter quarters, the northwestern quarter quarter, the northeastern quarter quarter, and the southeastern quarter quarter all met that 267-point threshold to be rezoned. So those properties could move forward. And we'll talk about this southwestern corner in just a minute. The major difference in these LISA scores is a result of having a varying average site value on the property, which is an average of the corn suitability rating of the soil located on the property. Again, the southwest corner had a high LISA score, which prevents it from, at this time, being requested to be rezoned. The other three parcels, however, may be considered. The proposed subdivision concept does not include development of streets or dwellings within the southwestern quarter.
However, the applicant is proposing to use this area as open space, recreation, and stormwater management area. These uses are permitted as principal permitted uses in the Greenbelt Conservation District, and the construction of housing is not permitted in that district. And therefore, if it was rezoned to the Greenbelt Conservation District, it would ensure that there would be no future development of single-family dwellings within that floodplain area. So LISA scores, as we discussed at a previous meeting, do change over time as the surrounding land zoning, land use changes. The LISA scores for a property will also change. So if the northwest, northeast, and southeast quarters were rezoned to the R1 Transitional Residential District, the LISA score of that southwestern quarter would fall to below the 267 point threshold, and therefore then be eligible for a rezoning request.
But it's still in the floodplain, right?
So it's recommended as a condition for a future subdivision plat that this an application to rezone the environmentally sensitive areas, including that southwest corner, quarter, be submitted at the time of the subdivision plat. And so this would allow a greater preservation of the natural resources, the environmentally sensitive areas of the property. Getting into the future land use map amendment standards, the extent to which the change would be consistent with the comprehensive plan goals and policies, I just pulled a few. Plan for housing types and densities that reinforce the predominantly rural character of Story County, minimize conflicts between agricultural and non-agricultural uses, and then provide for new development in the unincorporated areas that respect and enhance the area's rural character. Looking specifically at land use goals, land use goal 2 is to preserve, protect, plan around physical characteristics of the land, floodplains, steep slopes, wetlands, rich soils, and other environmental characteristics. The proposed amendment includes proposed conditions of identifying and designating the environmentally sensitive areas, including the floodplain area, as natural resource area. This designation will help to prevent development in the existing natural areas on the subject property. Land use goal 3 is to consider the availability and capacity of local services and infrastructure when determining future land uses. This area is served by Midland Power Cooperative. There's currently no gas service to this property, but based on discussions with the applicant, it is the intent of Alliant to work with them to extend a gas line west from the city of Gilbert to the subject property. Xenia Rural Water currently has the capacity to serve the proposed residential subdivision through a six-inch water main that's on runs along 500th Avenue, and then also a two-inch water line that extends west along 170th Street from Gilbert. It was communicated, however, by Xenia Rural Water staff that the existing system has a capacity to serve the residential use of this location, but if there was interest in allowing irrigation systems, further improvements would be needed. Land use goal 3 is to consider the availability and capacity of local services and infrastructure. Said before, it's the Gilbert Fire Association, which is located 2 miles to the east inside the city of Gilbert. Mary Greeley Ambulance is located over 6 miles to the southeast inside the city of Ames. The Gilbert School District serves this area.
And then it should be noted that this property does lie within the boundaries of three drainage districts. So special consideration would have to be given to that in terms of maintaining water flow into the appropriate district. Land use goal 5 is to establish open space buffers or greenways that provide connectivity from one city to the next. The proposed development does preserve the environmentally sensitive areas on the site, in addition to the area directly north of Squaw Creek. This provides future opportunity for a water or other type of trail along Squaw Creek. B, evidence demonstrating the reasons why the plan should be changed, including but not limited to whether new information has become available since the comprehensive plan was adopted that supports reexamination of the plan, or that existing or proposed development offer new opportunities or constraints that were not previously considered. The proposed development does offer new opportunities for the identification of the environmentally sensitive areas on the site. There's also potential for the addition of recreational area that was not previously considered at the time the comprehensive plan was adopted. The C2C plan does include a proposed trail and greenways map, which includes a proposed hard surface trail along 500th Avenue and 170th Street, which are the western and northern boundaries of the subject property. With the residential platting of the property, we feel it would be a good time to try and to provide a 20-foot wide easement on the north and west sides of the property to allow for the potential future development of these trails, which are in line with our proposed trails and greenways map. C is whether or not the changes that needed to allow reasonable development of the site. The proposed amendment from the agricultural conservation area to the rural residential area is necessary to allow a residential development on the site. The proposed conditions, however, of the amendment will more clearly locate and identify the natural resources on the site and provide opportunity for the preservation and maintenance of these environmentally sensitive areas. D is the relationship of the proposed amendment to the supply and demand for particular land uses.